Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Rapper, author, social commentator Zuby is going to join us, and we'll talk to him about everything. First, there's LifeLock. Venmo and Cash App make payments easy, but you should adjust your privacy settings so they don't share your personal information with third parties like banks or marketing firms. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives. Every day, we put our info at risk on the internet. In an instant, cyber criminals could harm your finances, your credit, and your reputation. Good thing there's LifeLock. LifeLock helps detect a wide range of identity threats like your social security number for sale on the dark web. If you have access, by the way, you'll have access to a dedicated restoration specialist if you become a victim. It's LifeLock, right, Dawson?
No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but you can keep what's yours with LifeLock by Norton. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year by using promo code Adam. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK or head to LifeLock.com and use promo code Adam for 25% off.
Let's do this. Yeah.
It's been a long time coming since I started in the game. Long time running, put my heart into the lane. People know the hustle and the people know the name. Do they understand the struggle? Do they really know the pain? An honorary heathen in a land of no religion. And honestly, I'm feeling like a limited edition. Fame is in my sight because I'm living with ambition. Playing in the game of life, I got infinite ammunition. My vision coming to
that is Zuby. Word of Zuby is the name of the album. It's available everywhere you listen to music, and also the podcast Real Talk with Zuby as well. Website zubymusic.com. Rapper, author, social commentator Zuby, good to see you again, my friend.
How you doing, Adam?
I'm doing well. I was enjoying seeing your appearance on Tucker Carlson last night.
Awesome.
And you know, it's kind of struck me when you see Tucker Carlson and he's talking to Zuby, nobody cares or knows less about rap than Tucker Carlson, possibly me. But, you know, these times have created some pretty strange bedfellows, you know, folks that seemed worlds apart a few years ago seem to be uniting. Are you feeling some of that in your world?
Most definitely, man. I mean, over the past 18 months alone, I've been to 6 different countries and dozens of different cities. And while it feels like there's a global sleepening going on, there's also a global awakening and a rise of consciousness, shall we say. And it seems that people from all different walks of life who are just awake and questioning and thinking for themselves are connecting with each other and are finding each other through all this madness. So as disappointing as it's been on one side, it's really cool to see that happening as well.
Yeah, I think like any tragedy, emergency, wartime or whatever, it's bringing out the best and the worst in humanity. So, you know, you look at World War II, you know, you have the French resistance and you have these people, I mean, God, maybe 80 or 90% of them were killed by Germans, you know, literally risking their life to try to liberate France. And then you have another group who are turning in Jews.
Yeah.
You know, they're both French citizens. Prior to 1941, 1940, they were just having a baguette at the same cafe. Mm-hmm. And now the shit goes down and one group has broken off one direction and the other group has broken off the other direction. And it seems to me that the only difference between then and now is that the fucking cowards that are giving up the Jews are blaming the French resistance.
Yeah, it's wild, man. I mean, I've said before that we're living through a pandemic of cowardice.
Yes.
On multiple levels. This is both the ridiculously disproportionate response to the virus itself, right? We know that we have the details and the facts and the data and the statistics about this particular virus from all these different countries. And this particular virus is it's a situation where it very much, how it affects people is largely based on demographic data, particularly age and comorbidities. We know this. In my home country of the UK, the average age of death is over 80 years old. And that matters. This is not me saying, oh, you know, you want old people to die or you don't care about grandma. All of this emotional blackmail that people throw out there. The point is that people who are in their 80s, in their 90s, in their 100s, they do die. People were not immortal prior to 2020.
Well, I always say, conduct this little thought experiment. I have kids. When I was taking them home from the hospital, if every family, every parent, everyone who was leaving the hospital with their newborn, if right before they got to the front door, some staff member at the hospital said, oh, hold on, you got to spin the wheel.
Okay.
And they went, what's on the wheel? Well, it's just a wheel you spin, and half of it says 8, and on the other half it says 80. Mm-hmm. That'll be the age your newborn dies.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Spin that wheel. If it lands on 80, you hug your wife, you break down in tears, you yes. thank Jesus Christ, mm-hmm. you chill some champagne. Yep. If it lands on 8, then you're devastated. Mm. That's all you need to know about life and age and the difference between people dying in their 80s of COVID mm-hmm. or anything else and kids dying. That's yes. the difference. If people say every life is precious, one life is too many, yeah, yeah, great. Tons of platitudes. Mm-hmm. But the reality is you're supposed to die at that age
yeah.
naturally. And look, it's you died of COVID. It's tragic. But it's not that tragic when you're 84. Mm. It's super tragic when you're 14.
It's also not more tragic than dying of anything else.
Right.
Right? We're living through this weird time where deaths from one particular cause, which, by the way, is not, you know, one of the a top cause, certainly globally, is somehow elevated as being more important and more tragic than everything else, more important than dying of cardiovascular disease, cancer, other respiratory illnesses, whatever it is. All of a sudden, it's this one particular virus.
Yeah.
People care about it more.
And the young people are dying of suicide and drug overdose. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. that is a real byproduct and a real situation.
Yeah.
So the bigger question that I keep trying to drill down on, and I talk to Dr. Drew about it a lot, I'll talk to Tucker about it on occasion, is like, what's the phenomenon that's going on? Because it's way past COVID. Mm. COVID is, that's the sort of bridge that is getting us somewhere. But who's walking on that bridge, and where are they going, and what did it awaken in humanity? Because I'm seeing it all over the place, and it's more than, well, there's a disease and some people take it seriously and others don't.
Yeah.
That's not the explanation. Something is going on.
Yeah, it's not that simple. There's a whole bunch of false binaries and false dichotomies that have been going on through all of this. So yourself and myself, we're looking at this holistically. We understand that, okay, this is the disease, this is who it particularly affects and who specifically should be protected if you're going to have certain measures. It shouldn't be a one-size-fits-all situation. Also, any proposed solution or policy also has its own ramifications, right? Devastating ramifications, especially if you're going as far as lockdowns, stay-at-home orders, business closures, pulling kids out of school, forcing people to wear masks all the time, socially distance. All of these things, to varying degrees, have many negative consequences, ranging from relatively minor to very, very severe. And we're looking at the whole picture holistically, but people are trying to make it seem that either you don't care at all and you don't care if somebody dies of COVID and you want grandma to die, blah, 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 or you're totally on the other side. Same with the vaccine thing, right? Now, if someone is literally, if your position is just, hey, I think it should be up to you whether or not you take the shot, that's now called anti-vax.
Right.
Since when? Right. That's not anti-vax. So you could have someone who's taken dozens of inoculations throughout their entire life. And then when it comes to this one, there's even people who have taken it and who are just saying, yeah, I think it should be up to people. I don't think it should be mandated. And they're being called anti-vax. Or right. Someone who's taken it and said, hey, I had some bad side effects. They're being called anti-vax. So everything is being shoved into this false binary. And when people do that, it stops them from thinking, especially when you combine it with all the fear and propaganda that's already been out there running for more than 500 days straight.
Well, there's a lot of language and control the language, right? Mm. You're a COVID denier. Who's a COVID denier? It's all over the place. It's all you hear. It's all you see. Mm. Now, look, there's a couple of flat earthers out there too, but sure. Nobody takes them seriously. So I have never met a COVID denier. I've met plenty of people that don't see any reason why you should wear a mask mm-hmm. while you're riding a bicycle along the beach. Mm-hmm. That's not a denier. But it's interesting what we've done with language. And I've always kind of thought about it. I've always looked at it. It's, you know, seize the language, steal the language, pervert the language, and then use it as a weapon. Mm-hmm. You know, we've been doing this for a while. Remember a couple of years back, we got a company out here called Hobby Lobby, and the people are religious. So the people who run it said, well, we'll give you health care, but we're not paying for birth control because that's against our religion. Mm-hmm. But then that goes into they deny female mm-hmm. employees access. They mm-hmm. use the word access. And by the way, these aren't dumb people. These are college-educated people who arguably have a larger vocabulary than the folks they're talking about. Mm. Denying access is not providing. I do not provide lunch here for my staff, although Zuby got some kebabs. We'll get into that later. But the point is, but I certainly do not, that is nowhere close to denying them access to eat lunch. They sit back there and eat lunch that they provide for themselves every day. Mm-hmm. It would be insane if somebody labeled that as denying access to lunch.
Yep. Deny access to food.
Right.
You evil person.
Yes.
Yeah. This is the thing. And it's also where I find it difficult to give people the benefit of the doubt when they're doing this to such a degree.
Right.
Right. There's a level where it's like, okay, what do they say? Don't attribute to malice what can be attributed to stupidity or incompetence.
Right.
Right. But there's a certain level where it passes. And I'm like, y'all know what you're doing. Right. This is intentional. It's clever in many ways, actually, the way that some people are able to sort of brand and vilify people. You saw this prior to any pandemic situation.
Sure.
This has been revving up for many years. Obvious way, you know, look at the Brexit situation in the UK. Look at the Trump situation in the USA. Right. Again, you had these false binaries being painted. Right. And everyone who voted for Trump is racist. That's it. Mm-hmm. That's all it is. All those Americans, dozens of millions of them. That's all it was. The British people who voted for Brexit. Simple. They hate immigrants and they're racist. That's all. So either you're a good person and you're against Trump and you're against Brexit, or you're a bad, evil, racist, white supremacist, Nazi. Throw every label you can out there and you're on the other side. And it's not conducive to a healthy society. And this ongoing constant demonization in the long term is dangerous and potentially deadly as well. Because when you see a threat, the natural thing is to, if you believe that someone or some group is genuinely an existential threat to you, then you either avoid them or segregate them, right? People are openly pushing for segregation now based on whether or not someone's taken an injection, or to exterminate them.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to say this to be hyperbolic, but this has run many, many times throughout history, even within our lifetimes. It's happening right now in certain countries. And well, I wish people could just wake up and see that.
Yeah. If you're going to label one candidate Hitlerian, mm-hmm. then you're almost a coward if you're not fighting the person that's Hitlerian, by the way, using any means necessary.
Absolutely.
You don't have to play Marcus of Queensberry. You can do it like the French resistance, like mm-hmm. the underground did. Why? Those people are heroes.
Yeah.
Once you've labeled a group racist, mm-hmm. then you can do whatever you want with that group because they're racist. Why
yeah.
wouldn't you?
I mean, people went beyond racist in this situation, right? They went all the way to Nazi and white supremacist, right?
Right.
So if Trump actually were Hitler, he's not, but if he actually were the second coming of Hitler, then what does that say about the people supporting him, right?
Yeah, but there's also a phenomenon that's going on that I have trouble negotiating here, especially living in California, which is everything's racist. Every cloud that floats over your head can somehow Joy Reid can convert to racism on MSNBC.
They are very white, and sometimes they're quite oppressive.
It's, oh yeah, it's yeah, they'll block out the sun.
Looming over you. And,
that's
yeah,
right.
Exactly.
You won't get enough vitamin D.
Exactly.
But also, I can't figure out what's going on with people's basic judgment, which is to say, okay, we have a huge problem. Like you'll see the FBI director and the Joint Chief of Staff, you know, go, the biggest problem we have is white supremacy and white militias and white racism. And, you know, forget about Al-Qaeda. Our biggest problem is homegrown white people, really. And then you go, okay, but then how come I've never met one?
Mm-hmm.
How come I've never seen a rally? And you know, people listen and go, what do you mean they don't have? Yeah, they. Who's in the Klan? Mm-hmm. How big is the Klan? Do you know anyone in the Klan? Have you ever taken your dog for a walk and passed a Klan rally? Mm-hmm. Like, where are they and what are they doing?
In the imagination. That's where they are.
Yeah, well, it's basically like killer bees coming to California from Mexico. It's mm-hmm. like, I'm not saying there aren't killer bees. Mm-hmm. I'm saying you don't have to run serpentine to the mailbox. But there's something within many people that are satiated by that. It feels good. It's something. Because if it was okay, I'll see if I can connect these dots. Everyone knows they're sharks. And everyone knows sharks can be dangerous. And everyone has heard stories. They've seen Jaws. They see a story out of Florida where a bull shark bit a kid or whatever it is. But they still go in the ocean because they know, look, sharks exist, but what are we really talking about here? And I certainly can go down to Malibu and do a little belly surfing out there, right? A little bodyboarding out there. So there is a part of our brain that can kind of weigh risk, understand it, compartmentalize it, and go, yes, they're sharks. They're in that body of water that stands before me, but it's hot, and I'm going in for a dip. So we can do that. But I would argue, in a way, the Klan is like sharks. It's like they exist. Yeah. We've all seen pictures. We've all heard stories. But nobody encounters them like they don't encounter sharks.
No.
Why can't we do that same math?
It's a fantastic question, and it plays into where we are right now, which is just basic risk assessment and risk analysis. Now, all throughout our lives, every day, both implicitly and explicitly, we are constantly doing risk assessment. Just as you navigate the world, as you're walking around, driving, every single day, we're taking risks. Life has risk. And, you know, in a free society, people should be free to assume certain basic risks. I mean, if you don't know how to swim, there's not a law saying that if you don't know how to swim, you're not allowed to go in a pool or go in the ocean. But someone who doesn't know how to swim, I mean, human beings are naturally self-preserving. And right. So you know, okay, I have certain abilities or I don't, and I'm going to take this risk or not take that risk. And people should be free to do that. I do know people. I know a couple of people who won't get in a plane because they're afraid of plane crashes. Now, is that statistically, is that like a reasonable and a logical position? No, but people are free to have it. I would hate to force somebody onto a plane or into a car who does not want to be in it. Every time you get in a car, you get in an Uber, even if you're not driving, you are taking a risk. Every time you drive your kids to school, you're taking a risk. In fact, that's a bigger risk to them statistically than COVID. But people, here's something I've noticed interesting, Adam. I think that the novelty of a risk plays a much bigger role in psychology than the actual risk itself.
Mm-hmm.
If it's new,
yes,
right? This is why you can tell people, hey, look, statistically, the flu is more dangerous to children than COVID. Fact.
Right.
Right? More dangerous, more likely to hospitalize or even kill them. But we've had the flu for such a long time that when you say flu, people are like, oh, just the flu, whatever, right? People hear COVID and their sensors go off because it's new, it's different, and people are like, it's mutating. I'm like, dude, every virus mutates. That's not a new thing, but they keep – so I think that's why it's been so easy to amp people up, because it's something new, it's different, and for a lot of people, they then assume that means it's more scary necessarily than it is.
Yeah, it's sort of like we'll do that with a serial killer. We'll go, he's on the loose.
Mm-hmm.
We'll give him an ominous title, you know, the Night Stalker or something like that. People have no idea that statistically they're not any further in danger than they were the week before, but it's novel.
It's novel. New. And they'll be afraid of that particular person. Like you say you live in a city with a lot of violent crime, or in an area with a lot of violent crime, and there's also a serial killer on the loose. People will be more afraid of the serial killer with the scary nickname than they will be of just the general violence that's going on. In their brain, they think, oh my gosh, I don't want to be killed by the Night Stalker, whatever he's called.
Yes.
But they're not thinking, oh, actually, there's a higher probability. If I'm ever caught in a crossfire or whatever, it's more likely to be some gang stuff or whatever.
Well, I was kind of thinking about this a lot lately, which is this sort of indoctrination that I feel like we're getting into very strongly, especially in California, but, you know, look at Canada, look at Australia, look at New Zealand. There's something going on, and it feels like way more than we're playing it safe in the name of COVID.
Oh, yeah.
It feels much more motivated and much more powerful than that. And I'm trying to think of, is that politicians flexing muscle, or are they basically what I call crate training their subjects? Now, the reason I've been kind of drilling down on crate training is dogs feel safer in a crate. Mm-hmm. Now, that's how dogs work. You can put the crate in the living room and the whole goddamn house could catch on fire, and they're just as much danger as they would be laying on the floor. But they like the security of it. Mm-hmm. It feels, has the illusion of safety, the appearance of safety for them. And I tweeted out that dogs and cowards basically like crates. Mm. And somebody tweeted back to me something I thought was interesting. They said, yeah, but you got to train them. Because you can't get hold of a dog that's 4 years old and start crate training. You got to get him in a puppy as a puppy. And I start hearing news footage about, you know, 2-year-olds crying because people are trying to force a mask on him, and the school teacher screaming at him. And I go, oh, that's the crate training. Mm. We're starting early. You know, obviously there is no statistical proof that COVID hurts kids statistically.
No.
I'm not saying nobody's died. I'm just saying statistically, it's a zero, essentially. Yeah. Why the crazy emphasis on kids? We've essentially left the elderly alone. Mm-hmm. We've not put an emphasis on it. We're not really discussing it. We've discussed kids in schools way more than we've discussed the elderly who are actually at risk. Why this crazy masking, crate training for 4-year-olds, 3-year-olds, 2-year-olds, and I realize, oh, that's when you got to get them. Mm. They're not going to go into the crate if you leave them alone. You know, I got left alone. You got left alone. I'm not getting in the fucking crate. But if someone had coached us upright at a young age, we might be willing to get in that crate.
Yeah. Thoughts. And that's why it's so sinister to me.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't know every aspect of the agenda or how coordinated it is, and what is planned versus what is just sort of circumstance. I don't know all of that. But given that we know that children are not at risk of this thing, and shoving a mask on their face when they're perfectly healthy is not scientific or helpful or useful in any way, shape, or form, that is sinister to me. It's clearly sinister. So it's like, what is the motive, right? That's what creates so-called conspiracy theorists, who, by the way, have been right for the most part over the whole past 2 years. That's the thing that's disturbing. But the thing with targeting kids as well is that is every sane person, and especially parents, that's like the thumbscrew, right? So whatever the agenda is, if you target kids, or you can make the most, every adult, every parent especially wants to protect their children. So when they start messing with children in any way, shape, or form, that's when I'm just like, man, evil forces are at work here, because what you're trying to do is not making sense. Same with trying to force, you know, why would you COVID vaccinate a 6-year-old? It honestly makes no sense. If you understand the facts and stats.
That's the indoctrination inoculation. Maybe I can rap on your next down. But what I'm saying is that is the ultimate get used to the crate.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to force this upon you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's such a sad state of affairs that you have to explain to people that you're not against vaccinations and you're not against safety and you have kids. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're living in this bizarre time where you have to preface everything with, which is, I have black friends. I like black people. Yeah. I work with many of them. But then you have to, like, describe that you're not a homicidal Hitlerian maniac and then go, you know, for me, the kids being vaccinated, things either make sense or they don't make sense.
Yeah.
And we have a finite amount of time, money, and energy. if you're giving a vaccination to someone who doesn't really need a vaccination, then that's a wasted vaccination. Mm-hmm. Give it to an elderly person mm-hmm. or ship it out of the country mm-hmm. and give it to Sudan.
Absolutely.
And then use your resources.
Yeah, and it goes beyond children. They're trying to push to vaccinate people who have already had COVID and recovered. They've been totally acting, not just in the USA, but in multiple countries, as if at this stage, hundreds of millions of people have had this virus and recovered. And they've now got studies coming out, over 15 studies now, showing that the natural immunity is stronger than the vaccine-induced immunity, which wouldn't be a surprise given what we know from previous diseases. Yet they just overlook this fact, right? Even if you've had COVID, there's still people like, we still need to vaccinate this person, which not only is wasteful, it's potentially medically and health-wise potentially damaging. And also, it's insane. The only way it makes sense is through the lens of profit, power, and control. Outside of that, it doesn't make sense to me.
As Dr. Drew would say, it's an unnecessary medical procedure.
Mm-hmm.
If, in fact, you're already immune, mm-hmm. then it's unnecessary, and it's a medical procedure.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's necessary for the pharmaceutical companies to meet their goals. If they want to sell as many shots as possible, which seems to be what it is, in cahoots with various governments— and they want to get people, you know, there's countries now where they're pushing the fourth shot, right? People are in less than one year. And of course, they keep saying, you know, safe and effective. And it's like, okay, if it's effective, should you need a fourth dose in under a year? Like, I don't know. The thing with a lot of this is there's so much we don't know, and people don't want to say that. Throughout this whole situation, if officials, if the policymakers, doctors, scientists, the people in the government had said, okay, look, this is what we know, this is what we don't know, this is what's changed, if they just explained it and had some humility, admitted when they got things wrong, said things they don't know, then actually people would be far less skeptical about this whole thing. When people won't just be upfront, it breeds more skepticism. There's plenty of things I don't know. I don't know. Like, when it comes to these vaccines, how long does the immunity last? We don't know. Do we know? I don't know. How long does natural immunity last? I don't know. Some people are saying, could be up to a lifetime. Other people are saying it could be a few months. Like, I don't know. We don't know. And if people could just say that and look at all different sides and stop censoring people, including doctors and medical experts, and allow these open conversations to happen, not be banning people from YouTube for talking about different drugs or pulling this down and tearing. It's just all of that breeds more skepticism in someone who's already questioning things and going, lots of this doesn't add up. Then the more they do that and the more they push people in coercion, they started with incentives, now they're just moving straight to force. And it makes people go, yo, what's going on here? I'm even more skeptical now. This seems really sinister.
Yeah, seems like whenever there is an inordinate amount of energy that doesn't seem to fit the situation or the problem, I always kind of pause and go, what's going on? Yes. Why is this? I mean, you know, look, if you came home and your wife or your girlfriend was like, oh, you're home early. Let's get out of the house. Now, I'm not saying it's cheating. I'm saying she's planning a surprise party. But normally you come home and she doesn't get up off the sofa. Mm. Now she's met you at the door and went, honey, I scheduled a massage for you. It's going to start in 10 minutes. You got to get going.
Yeah.
You sense that and you go, where's the energy coming from? Like, what's going on? What do they want they don't care if I get a massage. Why are they pushing me out the door? Something's mm-hmm. going on. And yeah, they're either cheating or there's a surprise party. I hope it's a surprise party. But the point is like, why this insane campaign to mask up 4-year-olds or get vaxes, you know, fast track through mm-hmm. so your 5-year-old can get vaxxed up. Where's all the energy? It's not from the data. And so all I do is pause and go, what is going on?
Yeah. And it's also really bad messaging. When you've got people who have taken the shots and are very pro-vaccine, and then they're telling people to vaccinate themselves to protect we're literally at the stage of get vaccinated to protect the vaccinated. That's essentially where we are now.
Yeah.
And that is that makes no sense, right? If someone's taken the shot and it's like, and you believe it works, then it's like, okay, cool. Like, I'm good. Why should someone be vaccinated and fear someone who is not? It literally makes no logical nor scientific sense, assuming that it actually is doing its job.
Right.
And now you have – man, I've been contacted by so many people who in their families, in their friendship groups, their workplaces, whatever, people are shunning them or, you know, uninviting them for Christmas dinner or to weddings or whatever it is because they haven't taken the shot. And it makes no sense. Logically, someone who has chosen not to take the shot is more at risk from someone who has, because as we know with these, it doesn't stop you from getting it. It doesn't stop you from spreading it. It's a symptom mitigator. And so logically, it's flowing in the wrong direction. It doesn't make sense. But again, as we said earlier, people should be free to assume their risk. I think there are some people in certain demographics. If I were 80 years old and overweight and diabetic and hadn't had COVID already, I'd be like, yep, straight up, like, this makes sense. But if you're 18 and in fantastic shape, let alone have already had it and recovered and got the antibodies, then it's a whole different equation. And I just honestly wish people could chill out a moment and just respect that, as we always did. We always
did. You know, I play clubs. It came up last night. I was playing a club. And I go from a club in San Diego, and there's no vax passport requirement, no ID, no nothing. Mm-hmm. And then the next night, literally, I'll go to play a theater in Chicago, and no one's getting in without it.
Wow.
And I don't really like it, but when people say to me, you know, what's your opinion on it? I go, I don't own the club. I don't own the theater. Mm-hmm. I'll let them decide. And what I'm trying to illustrate is, why in the last 10 minutes did everyone have to take a Rock of Gibraltar stand against everything or for anything or nothing? When did this all come from? You know, I don't know about ivermectin.
Yeah.
I don't want to get in between you and your doctor when it comes to ivermectin. No. That will be between you and your doctor.
Yes.
I'm not interested in it.
No.
I'll be curious to see how you fared, and I'll look at the data when it comes out, but I'm not going to go on TV and go, this is horse paste, and people are poisoning themselves, when you have no information.
No.
And by the way, I've always just said stupid or liar. Anderson Cooper's not stupid. Don Lemon's not stupid.
No.
These people aren't stupid. They're, at this point, they're lying. I don't know what happened to their integrity. They're supposed to have journalistic integrity. I could never do that. But I don't want to graft myself onto every relationship and situation. You have a doctor. You work with that doctor. And the two of you, in consultation with possibly other doctors, decide what to do with your fucking body.
Yeah.
This I have is, no thoughts about it.
This is the thing, because it's such a simple position, right? It's just a pro-liberty position.
Right.
That's all it is. It's pro-liberty, right? And the problem is when you have people who are authoritarian and want to use the force of the state to force things upon people or mandate things upon people and don't want to just live and let live. I'm a very live and let live guy, like with a lot of things. I'm just like, look, that's up to you, right? Maybe I have my own personal situation, and I've done the math for myself personally, what makes sense or doesn't make sense for me. But for you, I'm like, okay, that's up to you. To me, it's literally all of this. It's the same as getting a piercing or a tattoo or taking an aspirin, whatever, right? Or chemo, right? Like I've never had chemo. I'm not anti-chemo. I just don't need it, right?
Right. Yeah, well,
right? Yeah, but I'm not.
These pussies are like, your nose hoop can kill me.
Yeah. Like, it's just, yo, if you want to take any medicine, I don't care if it's ivermectin, if it's hydroxychloroquine, if it's any of the vaccines, if it's, I don't know, some herb you got from your garden, whatever, if that's what you want to take and that's what you think helps, then, you know, I encourage people to inform themselves. But ultimately, that's up to you.
Yeah, you were alluding to us kind of being divided, and I've always screamed this from the mountaintop, and it hasn't made me very popular at all, especially in L.A., but I mean, this breaking everyone off into groups, you know, like as a lesbian, as a black woman, as a Hispanic, as a mother, like, please stop with the groups, stop with the labels. What year is it? It all it will do is hurt those groups. Certain people will profit off it, your Al Sharptons and your Jesse Jackson or whoever the anointed leaders, even just the fact that there's a leader of a group, you know what I mean? As a leader is
self-appointed
leaders of these groups and, you know, their network correspondents that support them and prop them up. But it's so insane. And I don't know why is it not considered insulting? If somebody, you know, Ted Nugent doesn't speak for me. But no. If he claimed, I speak for all white men.
Is he not the white leader?
He's up these top five. Yeah. But I'm just saying, I would be insulted if a white person said, I'm heterosexual, I'm white, I've now anointed myself the spokesperson. And Adam, you zip it over there. I'll fight for you, even though your lot will never get better, and I'll keep enriching myself. What is attractive about that?
I think some of that is somewhat unique to the USA, because in my country, in the UK, stuff like that is pretty different, right?
Really?
The society is a lot less racialized. The USA is far more racialized than the UK in terms of, I mean, you guys, I've made this point many times. People here say white American, Hispanic American, African American, Black American, Asian American. In the UK, we say British. That's it. No one calls me a Black British person or an African British person. They just say Zuby's British or he's English. More likely British people say. And that actually says quite a lot of just the way society is viewed and framed. And I think a lot of it just stems back, I think, perhaps to the history of the USA and the fact that you have got you've got a far more diverse country in terms of races and ethnicities. And I think that there was a time where you did have an – so if you think back, you know, not so long ago to, say, the civil rights era, where you did, you know, have specific Black leaders, whether you're talking Malcolm X or Martin Luther King Jr., and these people were very much viewed as Black leaders because there needed to be a united front to reach a specific goal.
Right.
Or if you were to go back to the women's liberation movement, there'd be specific leaders of that because people are seeking a specific common goal. Now, I think that in 2021, all of that is – I think we've been past all that for a while, but people are still kind of stuck in that mentality. So people are still running off the notion that all 40 million Black Americans, let's say, have like a specific common goal, which they all are – which is not true. Right. That's not the case, but it's often framed in the media, in politics, by activists and so on, as if it's like this Borg, this hive mind, and all these people want the same thing. You'll see feminists do this with women as a whole, half the population, right? They'll claim that they represent women, but it's like, no, you represent your little subsect of women. There's no one woman in the USA who can, or even hundreds of women in the USA who can just claim they represent all women. Just like you already said, it would be absurd to say that, to even suggest that somebody represents white people. Right? Like,
well,
it sounds insane.
It does.
People say it about others.
The part I love so much about it is it's a constant drum beating here in the States about women, women of color, whatever. Mm-hmm. Fine. They're all champions of women of color. They hate Candace Owens' guts.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
They hate her.
Of course.
And so here's the caveat. All Black women are our sisters, except for if they disagree with us on a few policies, in which case they're worse than the white devil at that point. Like, the worst thing you can be in this country is Larry Elder or Candace Owens or a Black man or a Black woman who disagrees with the culture and the politics of the majority. You are ostracized. You're called every name in the book. And by the way, they have no trouble using racial slurs and Uncle Toms and all that kind of stuff. So
I've been on the receiving end many a time.
I'm sure you have. So which is it? Are you a champion for Black people and Black women and people of color? Is that your thing, or is it only ones who agree with you exactly on every talking point? And if that's true, then stop calling yourself a champion of Black people.
Yeah, that's what it is for these people. It comes down to the ideology. It comes down to the ideology. It's, you know, there's plenty of people who don't, when they say diversity, they simply mean people with different skin colors and maybe sexualities and genders who all think the same way. Right. That's what it means. When a lot of companies or organizations or even political parties are saying we want more diversity, they don't mean diversity of thought. They simply mean we want people who look different on a surface level, but really they think the same way. And as soon as you see someone from any, say, minority group who doesn't, then they get it with, you know, both barrels. Those are the people who get the most heat because those are the people who they assume and believe, which, by the way, is extremely condescending and paternalistic. They believe that they're supposed to be on their side. And when it turns out they're not, you know, Candace Owens, there's people, I don't like to use the term left and right, but there's people on the left who think Candace Owens, as a black woman, should be on their side. She's supposed to be on their side. So she's a traitor. How dare you not be on her? Like to them, she's worse than, you know, you're a straight white male. You're not necessarily supposed to be on their side. Maybe you could be an ally, but you're not necessarily supposed to be. So they don't have that assumption of them owning you. But with her, it's like, hey, we're supposed to own you. And to me, that is the most, that's the real form of bigotry and racism and all these actual terms. Like that's when you really, really see it. And that's where it's also, it's commonplace and it's somehow tolerated and acceptable. And a lot of people don't see it, but to me, it's very obvious.
Well, it's I'm having many thoughts. I'm flush with thoughts as Zuby speaks. And one of the things that just keeps popping up in my head over and over again, and I'll tease it, but I want to talk about shame because I feel like shame really brings out the ire in people. You can call people meatheads or dumb fucks or douchebags and they don't really care. But if you go, you're a bad mother, and they feel like maybe they are a bad mother, they fucking come at you like a wolverine. You know, it unlocks things. It triggers things. You know what I'm saying? And I feel like a lot of what we're talking about is shame, even though we don't really talk about it. So Candace Owens shames the black community because she says, I'm fucking fine. I'm not oppressed. The water's fine. I work in this basically white environment. Nobody wants to harm me. I don't have a target on my back. I don't have to run from the police. I'm fine. And they're like, this message is fucking shaming because she's just going out and getting some. Like she's making hay while the sun's shining. You shame to a large degree in that you go out, you go on Tucker Carlson. Oh, that guy's the devil. He's a racist. No, he's a nice guy.
Yeah.
We had a good conversation.
Yeah, but this is people having the worst possible and least charitable interpretation of any message. Because if you actually take the time to listen to the message of, you know, myself or Ken, you know, myself and Candace, we're two very different individuals. You know, there's stuff we have our own different ways of doing things and our different personality, but ultimately for humanity in general, both of us have a message of positivity and empowerment, most importantly, right? Telling people like, look, you have the power to be the master, the captain of your own ship, the master of your own destiny. You have the power. Sure, maybe this happened to you or that happened or even that happened to your ancestor, or maybe there's this or there's that. But ultimately, if you take responsibility and you put in the work and you make good decisions and you work hard, especially in this country, like this is the country with the most opportunity in the entire world. If you are an American or you are in America, wherever you start from, this is truly a place where you have the potential and you have the capacity to really, really rise up and be successful in all sorts of different ways. So we're trying to tell people this, like, hey, yo, you've got the power. It's not, the government's not going to do it for you. The government's not going to make you successful unless you become one of their cronies. Some random person isn't going to make you successful, but also people aren't going to stop you. Maybe if you went back 100 years ago, situation was different. But right now, if it doesn't matter who you are, straight, gay, male, female, black, white, brown, Hispanic, Arabic, whatever, if you work hard and you're a decent person and you put in the work and you – not only will people not stop you, people will help you. People will give you opportunities. They'll see you pushing that car and they'll come out and they'll push with you, because people like to see people who are trying to succeed and do better in their life. People are actually charitable. Sure, we have all these negative aspects of human nature, but also human beings are very kind and generous and want to help people. Most people do actually want to make the world a better place and help other people in some way, shape, or form. And it's trying to get people to see this, to break them out of this real negative mentality and have them think that you see someone successful, think, hey, that's inspiring. That's awesome. How can I do that? Or how can I take a little bit from that, rather than thinking, oh, they must have sold out, or they're this or they're that, and doing all that name calling. It's like, it's the same thing, but people can interpret that in two different frameworks in their head, and one is much more beneficial than the other.
Oh, one is devastating.
Yeah.
Like, the negative side is you'd be much better off in a wheelchair than walking around with that in
For
your
real.
Head. It
For
is,
real.
It's hobbling. It's devastating. It to take away someone's agency.
Mm-hmm.
That's everything. That's all you have as a creature, mm-hmm. is that agency. And all they do is just work overtime and weekends to try to convince you that you're not in charge of yourself.
Yeah.
And that is insanely destructive.
Yeah. And it's not just destructive, it's also a lie.
Right.
It's also not true, right? They talk, some people talk as if every week, I mean, I don't know, you're a straight white male, so maybe I'm not privy to this, but they make it sound like, you know, there's these gatherings of the patriarchy and of, you know, people, men are gathering every weekend trying to work out how they can keep the boot down on women and stop them rising up, or white people are there gathering every evening, working out, okay, how can we, like, harm these people? And it's just like, that's not a thing. That doesn't exist. At best, most people, like, at worst, most people are apathetic.
Right.
Most people are kind of like in their own zone, in their own head. They're not thinking about you. They're not worrying about you. People get self-conscious over all things. And it's like, look, you know, people aren't even watching you. Like, people walk past you in the street. They're like, whatever. They're not thinking anything.
They got their earbuds in. Yeah. They're listening to some podcast.
They're in their own head.
I know. We're too narcissistic to be racist. It's a calorie burner, man.
Yeah, people aren't walking around every day like looking at people like, you know. It's just like, yo, just get on with life. And again, if you exist in the real world, you'll know that people are. You know that there's like all sorts of decent people. And there's also all sorts of bad people. But that's when people throw out crazy notions, when they say things like all men are this, or all women are that, or
masculinity.
I'm just like, come on, man. How can you live through life and say a statement like all women are, you know, all women are trash, or all men are trash? It's like, really? So you've never encountered someone of the opposite sex who's like kind and decent? You know, not even your own family, your own siblings. Like, you really think all men are trash? Really?
Well, you know, we're living in a time when there'll be a woman at the podium and five men behind her masked up, and she'll be talking about toxic masculinity, and they're clapping, and it's like, we are talking about you, white, rich, middle-aged, male congressperson. Like,
yeah.
All right. So much more to get into with Zuby. First, let me hit Candid. There are specialists for everything. Mechanics, roofers, plumbers. When you want to fix uneven or crooked teeth, you see an orthodontist. Candid, invisible, comfortable, and removable aligners. Unlike poorly reviewed or insanely priced clear aligner companies, they that use general dentists, Candid only works with orthodontists, the same experts in tooth movement. That's what these people do for a living. A licensed orthodontist who will create and prescribes your plan. So you're only dealing with a licensed orthodontist, not a general dentist. And they work with you start to finish. You can book an appointment at Candid Studio, at a Candid Studio, I should say, near you. And do it from the comfort and convenience of your own home. Average treatment is just 6 months and costs thousands less than traditional braces. Includes Free teeth whitening, right, Dawson?
Candid can help you get the straighter, brighter smile you've always wanted. Right now, you can get save $75 on your Candid starter kit when you get started from home, or you can book an appointment at a Candid studio near you today. Go to candidco.com/Adam and use code Adam. That's candidco.com/Adam. Code Adam. Take advantage of this limited time offer to save $75 on your starter kit. Candidco.com/Adam. Code Adam.
All right, take a quick break back with Zuby to talk about where all this is going right after this. Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there. Owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Do you want to be a part of Adam's next book?
Well, sometimes I do.
Submit your questions for Ask an Asshole by emailing them to askhole@adamcarolla.com. Please include your name, age, and location. Ask about any topic you need the Ace Man's advice or answers on. That's askhole@adamcarolla.com.
Back with Zuby. I should give a plug to Zuby. Word of Zuby is the name of the album. It's available wherever you listen to music, and the podcast, Real Talk with Zuby, zubymusic.com. I've kind of said, people look at me sometimes and they go, where are we heading? Because I predict things sometimes. And I say, safe spaces and octagons. Half this country's going into a safe space and cuddling up with their huggy bookie, and the other half is doing a Tough Mudder or going into an octagon and getting some mixed martial arts training. And I see it around here. I've said many times, you know, the more Priuses and electric cars and Teslas I've seen in Southern California in the last few years, I've seen more Jeeps with knobby tires and lift kits on it. So where's the Jeep coming from? And the Jeep is coming from somebody trying to be pushed into a Prius. And you can see that's how we work, right? And we were sort of alluding to it. Unfortunately, physically, people are just going to go, look, I'm going to leave California. I'm going to go to Texas.
Yep.
I like guns, or I like freedom, or I like what you fill in the blank. I don't want to be overly regulated. It's like it's causing – the one is causing the other, I would argue.
Yeah.
So where do you think this is going?
I mean, in the USA, speaking as an outsider, I also see that there's this – what would I call it? Yes, maybe like a soft secession, right? Not an official secession, but people who value freedom and liberty, both high profile people such as, you know, Joe Rogan, after many years in California, has moved to Texas. Lots of high profile people have moved to red states, and on a, you know, just, and then just average everyday people. That's a huge migration that's going on. And then you've got people who are, I've also seen people who are afraid of, you know, the Texases and the Floridas. Right now, they think that, you know, people in Texas are, you know, they're afraid of freedom. I heard someone the other day say, this is paraphrasing, something like, I'm worried about, like, the people in Florida are crazy with, you know, with all their freedom and stuff.
Right.
With all their freedom. And I'm like, man, this is coming from someone in the USA. I think it was from someone in New York who said this. They're crazy with their freedom and stuff. And that's wild. I mean, people can't agree on freedom and liberty anymore. That's
Here's how we agree on freedom and liberty. It's just like the people on the college campuses that don't want Ben Shapiro to come speak on their campus. And you go, aren't you for free speech? Yeah, I'm for free speech. I want to vet it. I want to make sure it's not hate speech. And Shapiro happens to be hate speech. So we can't have him on the campus. So we're going to shut him down. So basically, freedom and freedom of speech and liberty, it's almost like everyone goes, like, do you have a good sense of humor? Do you like to laugh? I like to laugh. Yeah, of course I got to go. Now, that guy crossed the line. That was not funny. That shit that person said, not funny. Yeah, I like that. So everyone does this thing where they go, of course I. Yeah, free speech. Sure, I'm all for it. Freedom, liberty. Yeah, of course. Now let's discuss. And then as you discuss what their plan is, you're like, well, then you're not for freedom.
Yep.
Oh, no, I'm for freedom. I just want three-year-olds to have to wear a mask before they get on an airplane.
Yep. And this is the pandemic has it's unveiled a real split in human personality types. It's really unveiled a split. Perhaps nowhere this has been more apparent than the USA, because you're uniquely positioned as a country that's made up of 50 different states, all of which have had their own unique response. And you really just see this bifurcation of, I'd say, people who are neurotic and lean towards safety or an illusion of safety versus people who are less neurotic, more individualistic, and less collectivistic, and who lean much more towards liberty. And the thing about liberty and freedom is that they are, I can understand how they can be considered quite scary concepts in a way.
You're a dog outside of its crate.
Yeah. And I think people always imagine worst case scenario. So take something simple like free speech, okay, which literally, you know, words do not physically cause damage to anybody, okay? We all agree that there are things that are out of line, and there are things that, you know, everyone has their various things that they find offensive, or there's stuff which everyone generally agrees is egregious and so on. But most people who I'm a very strong freedom of speech advocate. Like, I don't even cuss. Right? I don't even cuss. So people have this notion that, oh, people want free speech because they just want to be able to say nasty things and racist things and misogynistic things and whatever, right? People want guns because they want to be able to murder people and shoot people. Why do you want an AR-15? It's because you want kids to be shot in school. And it's just, it's like, man, I think a lot of what we've been discussing comes back to, I wish people could just be more charitable. Just be more charitable, right?
Well, like, here's to the worst. Here's an interesting concept. I've pre-labeled my thought interesting. So now you're under a lot of pressure to be fascinated by it. But if you are a person that's data driven and statistically driven, then we don't have to, you know, Zuby, when you talk about AR-15s, just to go back to it, I'm not a gun expert, but someone goes, AR-15s, these are killing machines, these are military-grade weapons, we need to get them off the streets. And then Zuby says, well, how many Americans were killed by AR-15s last year? And they go, huh? And then they go, well, how many? Because it turns out, you know, more overwhelmingly, people are shot by handguns. You're not trying to ban.
Or even stabbed.
Or stabbed or punched. You know what I mean? So why all the energy with the AR-15? You're talking about all the killings. Show me the data about how many dead Americans there are at the muzzle of an AR-15. And they go, you're a bad person.
Yep.
You want kids to die, don't you?
It's very emotional.
So it's like, I can't make an argument, so I'll just call you racist or say you hate kids or create some sort of scenario. So you want everyone with an AR-15 to just be walking up and down the street shooting at kids. Like, when you hear an argument take a turn for the emotional, that means that person is tapped out of the argument. They've lost the argument, but they're going to win the argument because being labeled a racist or hateful or not caring about kids trumps the data. And they figured this out quickly. So it's sort of like you could have an argument with your wife or your girlfriend, and that argument could be what time they said the party was going to start versus what time you said the party was going to start. But at a certain point, they just go, you're bad, dude. Well, that means they've lost the argument, but they've won the war. And what I'm seeing more and more is, look, nobody's going to statistically win an argument with I'll harken back to a guy like Ben Shapiro. The guy's a statistic machine. He spits them out all day. Or Jordan Peterson or some guy like that, or Zuby. Okay, I'm sorry. I never put you in the pantheon of the greats. But
that's all good, man. I appreciate it.
You don't want to go in and argue with Jordan Peterson. Mm. He's going to destroy you. And you don't want to argue with Zuby about how dangerous it is for your five-year-old who may get COVID and or AR-15s with Tucker Carlson. Mm. You don't want to do that. And you're going to lose. Mm. And you have to lose because you're having an argument and you cannot back up your side of the argument. So you go right to hateful, misogynistic, racist, what have you. Mm. And now you've won the argument. And I don't know why that doesn't resonate with people. You know, I live in California. We just had a runoff election, a recall election, and Larry Elder is on one side and Gavin Newsom's on the other side. The only arguments I heard about Larry Elder was that, A, he was racist. By the way, does anyone ever tell him just to fucking, like, is there ever a meeting where they go, this guy disagrees with us. All right, we call him racist. He's black.
Black, white,
supremacist. Well, we're going racist anyway. Yeah. Like, is there any vision or sanity where someone can go, we really shouldn't play it every single time there's someone who disagrees with us, but he's racist. All right. The entire argument from Gavin Newsom was he's bad, he hates women, he's racist, he loves COVID and hates women and he hates black people. Okay. Would you guys like to put up one piece of evidence or argument or something that has to do with an agenda that may have to do with forestry or schools or clean water, just or potholes or anything? Or is it all just going to be this? Why is that attractive to the voters and why does it work?
I think it works because human beings are way more emotional than we give ourselves credit for. So many people are more driven by, perhaps the majority of people might be more driven by emotion than by true rationality and logic. And I think also numbers and cold hard facts in the absence of some kind of story or narrative ring a little bit hollow to people. People like stories. People like narratives. That's just
right.
Yeah,
that's perfect. You can go statistically. Mm-hmm. 5-year-olds don't die of COVID, and they go, "I was watching CNN, and they showed a 6-year-old who was hospitalized. His name was Bradley, and he loved basketball, but he'll never play again." And it's like, "All right, you're telling me about one kid,
but that's powerful.
But that one kid." For the story, you just put a name to that kid. You told us what he loved to do. Mm-hmm. Showed a picture of him holding his basketball. Now somehow we're all in. Mm. What the fuck happened to everyone's brain?
That's just how people – it's how people are. I just think that's how human beings
But is it how we're becoming? You know what I mean? Because I have this thought that when we worked in the tangible world, like when people worked in sawmills and had to deal with blades and things that could kill them and made things with their hands and pounded on steel and shoed horses and stuff like that, we didn't have a majority of people thinking this way. I feel like as we make our way into the digital world, where we're all just kind of floating in this ether, where there is no more real gravity, where you don't have to go thatch a roof or mend a fence or whatever. Now we got a lot of ideas.
Yes.
We're living in this sort of ethereal digital idea world, and we're all floating toward the feelings.
That's a big factor. And I think another thing is, especially online, sometimes offline, but especially online, people are always playing to the crowd. It's one of the big problems with take something obvious like Twitter, right? Everybody does it to an extent. Everybody plays to the crowd to a degree, but when there's a public conversation or a public debate or something like that, it's harder for people. Not only do you, there's a lot of problems with that form of communication. Obviously, you can't see body language. You can't hear a tone of voice. You can't see somebody's face. You're not getting reactions in real time. You're separated from each other. But also, there's an audience. There's a crowd. And people don't want to lose face. People want to protect their egos. It's so rare to see someone online, like, gracefully take an L. Just be like, oh, you know what? I was wrong. No, people dig in their heels. And that's when it always leads, like you said, you've already said, 80% of the time, insult or ad hominem every time, or some crazy straw manning of what you said. You'll say some of these things. It just goes back to, so you're saying you want everybody to die?
Right.
So you're saying that COVID is fake?
Right.
So
right.
You're saying that nobody should take the vaccine and it's going to, right? Like, it's like, I didn't say that. Like, at no point, I often just tell people, I pull up where I said that. Like,
yeah.
And if they can't, and I'm like, okay, will you apologize? And if they say no, then I'm all right, I'm not dealing with this person again.
Well, last question, but speaking of audience, I saw you on Tucker Carlson. What has been happening is, like, a guy like you, considering what you do for a living, at least one of your jobs, rapping, and where you're from, color your skin, you should be welcome on CNN and The View and MSNBC because you are what they want. You're a black man. You're a musician. And, you know, people say to me all the time, like, oh, you just go, you're going over to Fox so you can hammer a check, you know, or play to your buddies, your audience, or your constituency over on Fox and all that. And it's like, no, I speak my mind and Fox is the only one who'll have me.
There you go.
That's where we're at now. And I would love to go on CNN. I'd love to go on Anderson Cooper's show, but I'm no longer welcome on that show. What is going on where all these people, you know, it's happened to Dr. Drew, it's happened to Mark Garagos, the attorney, it's happened to me, it's happened to everything. They all have, and it's like, oh, you're going on there to suck up to Tucker Carlson. No, he's the only one who'll have us.
There you go.
Is that what you're experiencing?
I think everybody does. I mean, there's even people who are openly left-leaning, liberal, progressive even, and all they need to do is just stay still and sooner or later, they'll find themselves more on the right side of the aisle, not because they've shifted to the right particularly, but just because their own side has run so far off in one puritanical ideological direction. And the truth is, you know, good ideas can stand up to scrutiny. And I think if you are not willing to have those conversations, I'm not even always talking about a debate, right? Not everything has to be a debate. Just have conversations and discussions and have your ideas challenged and run through all of that, then how strong do you believe your ideas are, right? You don't need to – good ideas don't rely on the censorship of everything else because they can stand up on their own. You can argue them, and a good idea is a good idea. So when you start needing to deplatform or ban or censor or do all of this stuff, to me, it's a massive sign of weakness and cowardice. That's saying, okay, so you don't believe that your idea – can stand up to some questions and some scrutiny. And again, that's been a huge problem here. Take this, you know, this Dr. Fauci guy, like in your country, it's like throughout this whole thing, like every week, he should be getting grilled every single day by journalists, by they should be, you know, he should be getting grilled. Absolutely. He's saying things that don't make sense, that are flip-flopping, totally different to what he said last month, to what he said. Yeah. If we had an honest media and people were just more open and honest, then all of the – like I'm a big fan of the marketplace of ideas. I'm like, look, throw them in there. If your idea is trash, a better idea is going to easily beat it out as long as someone can do a modicum of articulation. And if you have a good idea and you put it out there, it'll stand the test of time.
Well, yeah. I mean, look at it this way. I was thinking about this. Dr. Fauci – shows up, you know, five times a week on MSNBC and CNN. He does every podcast. He does every show.
Does he ever do Fox?
No.
Interesting. Okay.
Okay. So probably the biggest radio program we have out here are Clay Travis and Buck Sexton, who took over for Rush Limbaugh. So Rush Limbaugh was the king, and he had 500 stations, or I don't even know how many stations, but they have 400 and some odd stations. They have a huge audience. They're good, and they took over for Rush Limbaugh. So let's figure this one out. Fauci keeps talking about all these Trump supporters who don't trust the vaccine, who ignore the science, who don't want to do what Gavin Newsom tells them to do, or what Cuomo did tell them what to do. So these guys, right. So Fauci, why are you going on CNN and preaching to the choir? Why are you sitting across from Joy Reid and talking about getting vaccinated? Everyone who's watching Joy Reid is all vaxxed up and all on your side.
And still scared.
But if you'd like to get some uninitiated people, there's a whole bunch of ears, and you can go to the other side of the aisle, and you can be a guest on one of these shows, and you can talk to their unwashed masses and tune them up. But you never show up on those shows.
No.
Why not?
Yep.
I'll tell you why, because you're going to get challenged.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have good answers.
That's all it is. That's all it is. And it's a shame with something like this, because the consequences of that are potentially lethal and catastrophic in this particular situation. By shutting things down, not allowing people to ask basic questions, vilifying people all the time, creating these false binaries, all of this is – that's the real anti-science. Science is pro-discussion. Science is – it shouldn't have been – follow the science and trust the experts. It should have been question the science and challenge the experts. That's what it should have been. And maybe then things would be in a much better situation.
A good point to go out on. Word of Zuby is the name of the album. It's available wherever you listen to music and a podcast, Real Talk with Zuby, and the website zubymusic.com. Zuby, always great talking to you, my friend.
Appreciate it, Adam. Thank you for inviting me back on.
Time sails right by. I'll see you on Anderson Cooper tonight. And I'm going to be in Chicago, Park West tonight. If you want to come out, bring your vax card, but that'll be tonight. I'll be doing stand-up there. And go to AdamCarolla.com for all the live shows. Until next time, it's Adam Carolla for Zuby and Vinnie Tortorich and Gene Unbald saying mahalo.
Why isn't my waist is so small and my tits are twice as big?
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Mace on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. And get your tickets to see the Ace Man. Get them now at AdamCarolla.com.
Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there. Owning. Renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle your policies at Geico? Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Pluto TV is playing the biggest movies every night this summer for free. Watch hit movies like The Matrix, G.I. Joe Retaliation, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Scary Movie, Runaway Bride, and more all summer long. Check out the biggest stars like The Rock, Keanu Reeves, Tom Cruise, Julia Roberts, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and more. Plus, Pluto TV has hundreds of free TV channels in English and Spanish featuring TV shows, news, sports, comedy, and more all for free. Download the free Pluto TV app on your favorite streaming device, including Android and Apple smartphones. Pluto TV. Drop in, watch free.